Lavina Thomas, and I am currently a Lyft driver, and I enjoy your radio station the most. As of March 4th, I'm a year clean and sober. Not ashamed to say I'm living a new life, and you guys are part of it. So as I keep hearing about the donation, I figured I probably should go ahead and show my appreciation. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. That's the message of the day today. Great to have you with us on this Thursday morning. I'm Randall White, your afternoon news anchor. And I've been paired with the head honcho, the top dog, the big cheese, the CEO and president of Capital Public Radio, Rick Etchison. And the nice thing about the two of us being here together is you have a representative from the newsroom who can talk about the job that we bring to you day in and day out thanks to your donations. And the guy who helps see this big ship through the sea, I guess, each and every day, and has put us on a course over the last several years toward being really one of the dominant stations in California when it comes to public radio. And so it's great to have you with us this morning, and it's great to have you here, Rick, as well.
Thanks, Randall. I consider myself fundraiser, the chief fundraiser for the organization, and My main function is to raise money to help support all of the incredible journalism and programming that you and the rest of the staff do here.
And, you know, throughout this drive, we've heard from so many listeners. You heard from one just a moment ago who thank us for the different, you know, programs and products that they get to listen to throughout the week. And I just want to take a moment to sort of put that on a lazy Susan, I guess, and turn it around, because it's us that should be thanking you right now. A couple of times a year, we come to you and ask for you to support what you love to listen to. And you come through every time. And once again, we're on the path to wrap this thing up, hitting our goal, you've seen this go on and on.
It's amazing. And it usually comes down to the last hour of the fund drive when we make the biggest push, and I'm always sweating bullets coming down. It's 8 a.m. on Friday morning. We've got an hour to go, and somehow that last hour usually comes through.
So let's help you help us come through and give you the information you need to do that. Call with your donation now. Become an Evergreen member. That's what we're hoping that you'll do. It's easier for all of us. It saves money, and we know you want your dollar to go as far as possible in supporting Capital Public Radio. So you can do that right now by calling 1-800, followed by another 800-5867. Again, 800-800-5867. Or you can go online at capradio.org. Very easy to do it there. And you can see firsthand when you go to capradio.org where some of your money is going, because we have a very robust digital team that has put together an incredible website. And you can listen to a lot of your favorite shows right there online.
Absolutely. In fact, you can listen anywhere you are.
Right.
I've listened from our app. I've been able to listen to us in Europe and in Southern California. And it's a great thing that our digital team does. It makes our programming accessible really anywhere that you want to go. If you take us with you anywhere you go, we'll take you places you've never been.
I like that. You should coin that. That last time I was on vacation, I listened to us as well, and I know I should take a break from work, but I just don't think of this as work. Maybe you've heard me say that before.
Right.
I really do love Capital Public Radio, and we know that you love it as well. So do us a favor right now. Pick up the phone. 800-800-5867, or do it online at capradio.org, and we really mean it. Thank you so much.
Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. You might have heard the news this week that the principal of Paradise High School is resigning because he can't secure housing for his family. His name is Lauren Lighthall. His school, the Paradise High School, as well as almost every other school in that area and thousands of homes, were destroyed in the campfire last November. The temporary high school right now is in Chico. Because of this and a number of other stories happening in the recovery effort there, we have reached out to Paradise Mayor Jody Jones, and she's standing by to give us an update on those efforts. She's on the phone now. Hi, Mayor Jones. Glad to have you back on Insight.
Hi, Beth.
So how surprising was that decision, the announcement by the principal, Lauren Lighthall?
I think people were surprised because they don't want to see him leave, but it's not really surprising in terms of his wanting to do what is stable for his kids and his family. There are a lot of other people in the same situation.
What is the situation right now for families who are trying to rebuild or reestablish in the area, the people who didn't want to leave?
Housing is still an issue. There's virtually no housing to be found. So if you haven't found housing already, it's very difficult. The rebuild is just starting, so we've issued a few building permits. The debris removal is still going on, and people can't rebuild until their lot is cleared. About 600 lots have been cleared, but the government program has 11,500 to do.
So on March 28th, Paradise issued its first rebuild permit, I understand. There was a story about Megan and Jason Buzzard, who I think
Buzzard,
who are lifelong residents. Tell me a little bit about their story and what their plans are.
Well, they love Paradise and they want to come back, and they were very proactive from the beginning in terms of getting their lot cleared with a private contractor, finding a contractor and architect, and doing all the things you need to do to rebuild. We have since issued a few more building permits, and I think that number will continue to grow. In addition, one of the next priorities for debris removal is the mobile home parks in Paradise, which once they're cleared will make it possible for larger numbers of people to come back, because it's just faster to buy a manufactured home and have it delivered to a park.
Have many people stayed in the area waiting for this process to begin, or are people like the Buzzards outside the area somewhere hoping to return when they can rebuild?
I think it's both. There are a lot of people who are currently temporarily living in Chico, in Oroville, in Gridley, Biggs, Corning, all the little towns surrounding, and working on their rebuild. There's also people that I know that are have family elsewhere, and so they're staying with them, or they had a cabin somewhere and they're staying there until they can rebuild, but they do intend to return. And then there are people who, for what's the best of their family, they have decided to move elsewhere.
The population of Paradise was listed at 26,000 before the fire. Can you project ahead to November, the one-year anniversary of the fire? What do you guess the population will be at that point?
Well, we have about 1,400 standing homes in town, and over half of them have been reoccupied, and the others are slowly being reoccupied or sold to someone who wants to reoccupy them. So I think by November, all of those homes will probably be lived in. That's about 3,000 people at the average household size. And if we're able to get a mobile home park or two up and running by then, you might have somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people.
Hmm. You're listening to Jody Jones. She is the mayor of Paradise, California. We're talking about recovery efforts in the Butte County region after the campfire. It started on November 8th of last year, destroying more than 18,000 homes and businesses and other buildings. 85 people were killed. Mayor Jones, you lost your home. Can you tell me personally about your situation there?
Sure. I'm doing the same thing Megan and Jason Buzzard are doing. I'm living in a temporary house in Chico. I have an architect and a contractor. I'm waiting for my plans. My lot just got, they finished clearing it yesterday. So we're hoping to start construction in June.
And tell me, too, about the business of guiding the city and the people who are there through this decision-making process. I know you had a long history with Caltrans and working with all kinds of projects, but in a lot of ways, this must be new territory for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's been very challenging. I think we're making really good progress. 5 months after the fire, a lot of cleanup has happened. A lot of things have been put in motion. We're still working to get the resources that the town needs to keep moving. But we're about halfway through our visioning and planning process. The consultant we've hired will be giving the results of all the public meetings on Thursday next week. And the council will be making decisions as a result of those planning meetings at our May meetings.
What do people need to know about the process, the resources? Can you address any of the big questions that you hear over and over from people?
There were a lot of rumors that the town wasn't going to be giving building permits. That's obviously not true. It is a complicated process, but we have good people in our building department. They're there at the counter every day, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. So go in to town hall and talk to them or call them if you're not living in the area so that you can get the straight scoop about what you need to do if you want to rebuild. They have a checklist that's pretty thorough and that could help you guide you through the process.
And just to outline the process in its most simple form, residents can submit their plans, but the permits are issued once the lot has been cleared and then the soil testing is certified by the county. Is that correct?
That's correct. You can submit your plans without your certification. And they will review them and do everything. They'll just put them on hold until you get the certification. So that is correct.
Mayor Jones, on our program yesterday, we talked with the public health officer, Dr. Andy Miller, about the measles outbreak in the county. I'll refer everybody to our website yesterday for more information. But in that arena of health and mental health and services that are available, how critical is that component of recovery for your city and the county?
It is very, very important. We do have our Feather River Clinic open, and they are accepting drop-in patients currently. The hospital's not open up there. There aren't that many doctors on the Hill, so we're working with Adventist Health to try and stand up a standalone emergency room in Paradise so that our residents will have the medical care that they need.
And just going back to some of the information with the Paradise High School principal leaving, he's moving to Houston High School in Central California, just a few miles from Modesto. But with that came the news that Butte County has shifted dramatically on the affordability index, and the average home price jumped, I think 17% was the number quoted in 6 months after the fire. So the bigger picture of Butte County, is Paradise involved? Are you involved continually in services that cross over from county to city?
Oh, yes. We're all working together. You know, the county, portions of the county burned as well as the town of Paradise. And the housing crisis is a result of all of the people who lost their homes scrambling to find temporary housing as close as possible. I think Chico has the hottest real estate market in the country right now. I also think that as Paradise rebuilds and people get their permanent homes, that real estate market will settle down some. But that's going to take probably a year or two.
Let me ask about a couple different groups for outreach, the Paradise Community Guilds. Tell me about their weekly meetings, what they're offering.
I'm sorry, I don't have any information about that.
Okay, we'll post a link on our website. I think it's for survivors and neighbors to connect. I also heard, Mayor Jones, about a taco trailer that's still on the streets helping to feed residents. Is that still operating?
I don't have personal knowledge about that either. There are a number of food trucks in Paradise because of the water situation. Most restaurants have not reopened.
Okay. And I know you're on your way to meetings. I appreciate you joining us. But before you leave, will you just address the spirit of the people who are still there? And if there's any way, any immediate need that needs to be addressed, how are you in town day in, day out?
I think we're doing fairly well. The people are a resilient people. That word is being used a lot, but it describes the people who lived in Paradise. The ones who are staying are committed to rebuilding. They're excited about it. They're anxious to see the debris gone. And mostly when I talk to people, they say, did you see the daffodils in town? They're coming up. The flowers are beautiful. The grass is green. The sun is shining. Things are going to be good again.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll have that conversation too, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Mayor Jones. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Beth. Have a good day.
That is the mayor of Paradise, California, Jody Jones. And we'll post a link to Butte County Resources. The website that's easy to remember is buttecountyrecovers.org. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.
We get support from Mattress Recycling Council's Bye Bye Mattress program. Since 2016, they have worked with small and minority-owned businesses, nonprofits, and others to help improve California's environment, one mattress at a time. ByeByeMattress.com. And from Makers XD, engaging students in creative summer courses that teach students to build go-karts, code video games, and become YouTubers. More information on courses in Sacramento and Rockland at makersxd.com.
Hello, this is Constance Smith. I am a, I would say, diehard listener. It's on my radio in my car, in my kitchen, and in my bathroom. And I am proud to be a member and just want you guys to keep us well informed, as you do.
Hi there, and thanks for listening today. I'm Rick Etchison with Randall White, taking just a minute now to explain why it's the perfect time to become a member of CAP Radio.
And I love what Constance had to say there, Rick, that she listens throughout the day, throughout her house, in her bathroom, and it's never been so easy to do just that. As a matter of fact, with a monthly donation of just $12, you can get this Bluetooth speaker with a suction cup that will just pop right on your shower wall. So you really can take CAP Radio everywhere with you and hear the amazing interviews like we just heard on Insight with Beth Ruyak and the mayor of Paradise. We've been following the Paradise story for you in collaboration with North State Public Radio and KQED. We have other collaborations with stations throughout the state. You've probably heard our California Dream series. Of course, ever since more than a year now, we've been following the Stephon Clark story, and we can only do these sorts of stories and news and music through your listener donations. If you haven't given, but you do listen and you enjoy this in-depth coverage, then don't wait any longer. The fund drive ends soon. This is the last full day. So contribute now by calling 1-800-800-5867. That's 1-800-800-5867. Or head online at capradio.org.
That's terrific. I love the diehard listener and the mayor of Paradise. One of the most amazing things that's happened in my broadcast career happened during the campfire last year. In November, the fire was still raging. We got a call from one of our members in Paradise. She was in the post office in Chico. She'd just gotten her new credit card, and she wanted us to have her new credit card number because she had lost her old one, along with everything else she owned in that fire. That is a diehard listener and fan And that's how much public radio means to a lot of people.
You get a call like that and you just assume and expect that they might be calling and say, hey, I need to pause my donations for a little bit. But instead it was, hey, I need to update my numbers.
Right.
Incredible, Rick.
And it was absolutely amazing.
And those are the type of listeners like you that we want to thank right now, because we are coming near the end of our fund drive here. Today is the last full day, and we're getting close to our goal, and it's because of you. So we need to thank you. And if you've been putting it off, you're one of those that sort of waits till the end of the drive, which, hey, that's me. I got to be honest. I think I got into this business because I need a deadline to get things done. Well, your deadline is now, 1-800-800-5867, or you can do it online at capradio.org. And a big thank you.
You're listening to Insight Live on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Hundreds of bills are in motion right now at the Capitol in Sacramento. We're going to highlight a few that have been moving with less attention, shall we say, than the police use of force bills. Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is joining me for this week's Capitol Chat. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
And hundreds of bills is completely accurate. In fact, maybe even 1,000 at this point.
Of overall bills active, well over 1,000 when you combine Senate bills and Assembly bills. It's insane. And some committee hearings this week have been starting at like 8 or 9 in the morning and going until 8 or 9 at night. Mm. It has not been a week for brevity at the state capitol. Let's put it that way.
Well, today we have this one-day teacher strike happening in the Sacramento Unified School District. So let's start on the subject of education. There is a conflict right now between the California Teachers Association and charter schools. So what's being considered in that realm of legislation, and who's on what side?
There has long been this tension, and generally a status quo has prevailed, where you have teachers' unions against charters about the growth of charter schools and whether they are regulated the way whether traditional public schools are, because in California all charters are public, and whether they're growing too quickly, whether they are siphoning money off from traditional public schools. And of course, many, not all, but many charter schools are not union schools. And so those are some of the tensions that are involved in this debate. Now, I think generally over the last several years, neither side has had enough votes to push through some changes to the status quo that they've wanted. Mm. They've certainly tried to make changes at the ballot box. I think most noteworthy, last year in the governor's race, the charters invested well over $20 million in support of former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who was running against current Governor Gavin Newsom. And now we already have a bill that passed earlier this year involving charters and transparency and subjecting them to the same transparency and open records laws that school districts and school boards are. So now we have another set of bills moving forward that have a lot of momentum because Democrats have more control of the legislature than before, 3/4 majorities.
Right.
That makes it easier to get to a simple majority in the Senate and Assembly. And Gavin Newsom is perhaps seen as being open to some of these bills. So those are the dynamics at play here.
So the group that we're focused on are Assembly bills AB 1505, 06, 07, and 08. Are these all different authors? Are they working together? Are they organized in this group of four bills? What's going on behind the scenes?
And as usual, there's always extra bills that may not, always get pulled in there. But I think there's, Senate bills that are getting in there, too. And at heart, look, backers would love to have a slate of bills. Sometimes, as we'll see in our next topic, one or two bills can fall off a slate and help enable other bills in that slate to move forward. But basically what we're talking about here are allowing school districts to have more control over charter school authorizations, letting them consider facilities and fiscal and academic impacts on the district. There's a cap being proposed on the growth of charter schools and the question of whether charters could operate outside of the district that authorizes it. So those are some of the reforms, some of the changes. I don't like using the word reforms in any context because that can, sometimes has a connotation of a consensus that a reform or a change is needed. Clearly, there's no consensus on this matter. Mm. And so the bills passed the Assembly Education Committee yesterday, and they will continue to move forward. They have several more committee and floor votes before they reach the governor's desk.
In the scope of students going to school in California, about 10% are enrolled in charter schools. But that's a big jump up. The numbers I'm seeing are that we are getting close to 650,000 students enrolled in charter schools. And the number could be even higher than that, because I think that's data from a few years ago. So if you have bills at the Capitol, you're going to get a lot of families, you're going to get a lot of teachers and the students. And I think that's what happened this week.
There were lots of voices on both sides, and our new state government reporter, Scott Rodd, was down there yesterday. He sent us a couple of short clips of tape that we're going to hear right now. And first, let's hear from Margaret Fortune, who runs a Sacramento-based charter school network. She was previously on the board of former SAC Mayor Kevin Johnson's charter, St. Hope Public Schools. And she has been active in charter circles, worked on a task force in the Schwarzenegger administration. And she is arguing that legislation would limit school choice, especially for students of low socioeconomic status.
Part of what the charter school law is intended to do is to give these kids another option within the public school system to have a high quality and rigorous education.
So it sounds like the activists are going to be careful about any of these bills going forward, and yet there is going to be lobbying. I think we're going to hear next from an Oakland assemblyman who is co-authoring one of the bills.
Democrat Rob Bonta, who's arguing that charter school laws have not been revised since they were introduced more than 25 years ago.
It's highly doubtful that when that bill was passed in 1992 that they got it exactly right.
This is a big question that probably isn't easy to answer in a simple way, but why have charter schools become such a lightning rod in public education? And I would guess it has to do with what I mentioned just a moment ago, the increasing numbers, for one thing.
Numbers, money, whether teachers at charter schools are unionized, those are many of the reasons that come into play, and just politics. Charters like to think of themselves as coming in and challenging a failing education system that they have, that they are able to break through some of the bureaucratic hurdles that can slow things down, try new things, experiment. Traditional public schools say, look, when you do that, you take away money, and because you take away students who move into charters, then the money for each student that the state provides goes into the charters. That leaves less money in for traditional public schools, creates additional challenges for them. California as a whole is down near the bottom of the 50 states in per pupil funding. And that is even after a booming economy for several years and an ever-growing budget and a new school funding formula championed by Jerry Brown that seeks to direct more money to low-income students and foster youth students and English language learning students. So this is just one of those battles that has gone on for years, and it will continue to go on. And sometimes it'll swing a little toward the unions, and sometimes it'll swing a little toward the charters, and maybe then there's an election and things swing back a little bit. But I think what's key at this moment is generally, as I mentioned earlier, the status quo has held for a period of time. And this could be a moment where the status quo swings. And if it does swing, it is going to swing away from the charters and towards the goals of the teachers' unions.
You are listening to CAP Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler. We have been talking about charter school legislation. Again, it's AB 1505, 06, 07, 08, and a number of others. Let's change gears to another issue that involves legislation that's really easy to call the big gulp legislation.
Yeah.
It does have to do with soda discussion and the style of sodas, which are the big gulp, the real big cups. But anyway, catch us up on what's happening with the soda tax and then the size of the containers.
So there are three different, and probably more, we talk about slates of bills. Here's another case. But three bills of note involving this sodas at the state capitol. And one is a statewide tax on sodas. Another is warning labels, health warning labels on sodas. And a third
sugary
is
sugary drinks.
Sugary drinks, yes. And a third is a ban on the big gulp size sodas, as in the sodas larger than 16 ounces, I believe. So obviously opposition to those bills. But it seemed, interestingly, if you stop and think about it, the biggest opposition from the soda industry, the restaurant industry, not necessarily to the tax, not necessarily to the warning labels. Apparently, the biggest biggest opposition was to the Big Gulp bill.
Banning that size of drink.
Yeah. So apparently, I mean, I'm sure they aren't huge fans of taxes on their products, but apparently they're more okay with that than they are with banning the sale of Big Gulps. So I think that's interesting.
So business stepped in and was able to limit some of the efforts of this legislation.
Well, the author of the Big Gulp bill has decided to make it a 2-year bill, which basically means shelving it for this year. It's the first year of a legislative session, trying again next year, hoping to make it easier for the other two bills to move forward. Not that those bills are going to be seen as sure things. The tax, for example, would take a 2-thirds vote. And the warning label bill has failed many previous years. But you could say, and I'm glad you didn't use the pun in the script that I floated to your producer yesterday, but you could say that business has taken a big gulp out of the anti-soda agenda.
Whoa.
By, I know. Thank you for leaving that for me. and by being able to push this particular measure off to the side.
Is it important? It seems important to note that we're calling it maybe the soda tax, but it also applies to drinks that are just sugary, which could be a sports drink. It could be an iced tea that's sugary,
yeah,
or even an energy drink of some sort.
And I should know this, but I haven't covered this closely. I wonder if Diet Coke, for example, would be subject to this tax. I'm sure many people listening now know, we're saying, Ben, you should know that. But sugary drinks, how technical is the definition? And will this change as it moves through the legislative process? Because these things often do.
All right. That's a to be continued.
Yes. I'm going to add one last thing, which is recall for listeners that last year there was a very ugly fight at the state capitol involving the soda industry and a prospective ballot measure on that ended up qualifying for last November's ballot that would have raised the threshold to increase local tax measures like Measure U here in Sacramento from a majority to 2-thirds. And a lot of local officials, including Mayor Steinberg, a lot of state officials, were very scared that voters might approve this measure because voters might say, hey, we think that a tax should take 2-thirds. It is a lot harder to reach a 2-thirds voter margin to raise taxes. And so in a deal struck at the state capitol, that really infuriated some Democrats, but they voted for it anyway because they felt they needed to. They agreed to pass a law banning new soda tax increases at the local level. So get rid of this patchwork, grandfathering in existing ones like the one that the city of Richmond passed recently. Grandfathering those in, but banning all new ones. And so lawmakers at the time said, we're not going to forget what the soda industry did. And clearly, they did not forget, and they are moving forward with these bills this year. And we'll see if the move by the soda industry last year ends up backfiring this year.
Again, you are listening to Ben Adler. He is Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief. At the end of every week, we have this segment called Capital Chat and review some of what's happened. So I do think I want to close the loop on our discussion this week about the hearing Tuesday on the Weber bill, AB 392, one of two police use of force bills. So let's talk about how that hearing ended and what the next step is.
So originally, I think we all expected the bill to be passed by the committee and sent on to the floor of the assembly for a full floor vote. Turns out it was passed by the committee, which I don't think was a surprise, and instead sent to the assembly rules committee. And you could, there's legislative speak where a normal word that you and I use for something else like parking, that gets used in a different context. So essentially, this use of force bill has been parked in the assembly rules committee. And it's going to hang out there while additional amendments are taken that give the bill a better shot of passing the full assembly floor, because there were multiple lawmakers at Tuesday's hearing, Democratic lawmakers, who said, we believe there needs to be a change, but we think what is proposed in this bill goes too far, and we want to see there be some sort of middle ground worked out. And so I heard two, and someone else heard a third lawmaker. So I think there were three of the six Democrats on the committee said, I'm voting for it today to keep the discussion going, but I want to see some changes. And that's, by the way, I should say, that's very typical for bills of high and low profiles to get votes in an opening committee from a lawmaker who says, I'm going to vote to move it along, but I'm not prepared to vote for it on the floor yet.
But how was it for the bill's author, Dr. Shirley Weber, that the bill didn't go to the assembly floor, that it is hanging out in rules right now?
I asked her office and I haven't heard back, which is odd because they're usually pretty communicative. My understanding is this was a change during the hearing, a decision made during the hearing. And I'll get a little bit into, sorry, apologizing in advance, a little bit weedy here. Law enforcement groups believe that there's a cost associated with this bill because new training would be necessary. And because of that cost, they believe the bill should be moved into the Appropriations Committee. That is often a place where a bill can get a cost analysis and sometimes be delayed further. That is not going to happen, my reporting suggests. Neither the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee, Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, or Speaker Rendon intend to do that. But it seems like this is a case of trying to maybe give law enforcement something by saying it's not going to appropriations, but we're going to move it over to rules. The other thing that I've heard is that, well, if it were on the floor, everyone would be asking, is it coming up for a vote today? Is it coming up for a vote today? And you'd have to keep passing each day on that bill. This way, you don't have to, because the fact is the bill's not ready for a full floor vote. If it went to the floor right now, the indications are it would not pass in its current form, and it would need to be amended on the floor anyway. So now there, you know, it's, you know, the argument I hear is it's essentially, you know, some people are saying, well, does this mean the speaker's going to sidetrack the bill the way he did with single payer? My read on that is absolutely not. Two different issues, two different bills, and the use of force bill will move when it's ready to move.
Was that discussion of appropriations a strategy discussion, or was that a real question about this bill?
Depends on who you ask. Yes.
Okay.
If in fact there would be more training required, yeah. I mean, there is a fiscal component to the bill. There is that other bill in the Senate that would go to a fiscal committee because it absolutely would require new training, lots of money for new statewide best practices and for law enforcement agencies, state and local, to change their policies to adhere to these best practices. But we don't even know if that bill is going to get through its first Senate committee. The chairwoman of that committee, Nancy Skinner, a senator from Oakland, has been seen as potentially willing to kill that bill to focus the discussion on 392.
All right. That other bill is SB 230. You will hear more coverage about that continuing.
We'll test you on it later. So
later
write these down
month.
Right after you write down the fund drive phone number.
The hearing Tuesday was very emotional. I'm going to refer people to your coverage of the hearing earlier in the week, which is at capradio.org. That was a very thorough Capitol chat, and I think there are so many bills we could spend that amount of time on, so let's continue to do what we can over the next couple weeks.
And thanks to our listeners who make it all possible.
Thank you, Ben. That is Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, and I want to add a P.S. to this. Next Tuesday, in terms of local government, Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg is going to join me in the studio, and we'll talk about a number of city issues. We're interested in what your questions might be for the mayor, so we're going to open up the Insight Hotline. It is a phone number, 916-234-3279. That's 916-234-3279. You can find that number on our website. Call in, leave your question. It might get used on the air next week when I talk to the mayor on Tuesday. This is Insight on Cap Radio.
Waking up can be alarming. Start your day with familiar voices bringing you news and more from around the world. Morning Edition gets you up to speed on today's most important stories and the rest of the things that make your world interesting, so you can ease into the morning well informed. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Wake up to Morning Edition weekdays until 9 on Cap Radio, 90.9 Sacramento, and at capradio.org.
And a very good morning to you. I'm Randall White, your afternoon news anchor here on Capital Public Radio, joined by Rick Etchison. He is the president, CEO of Capital Public Radio, and we are here to thank you for helping us meet our goal during our spring fund drive. We're getting very close. Today is the last full day. So we're asking you to jump in right now. If you've been sort of waiting till the end of the drive, now is your time. Right, Rick?
That's absolutely right. You know, you've heard about all the thank you gifts and the giveaways and all the stuff with our logo on it, but don't forget to forget why you listen to Cap Radio in the first place. We are counting down to the end of the drive, and we're waiting to hear from you. The drive ends very soon, so please make your important contribution right now. While we've got your attention, 1-800-800-5867 or capradio.org.
And one of the reasons you listen is because of the quality content. And you just heard a terrific CapChat segment on Insight with Beth Ruyak, with our Capitol Bureau Chief, Ben Adler. Nobody covers politics here in California the way Ben does. I'm astounded every single time I get the opportunity to have a two-way with him, and I sit there and I'm asking him the different questions. You can't throw the guy off. You could ask him just about any question under the sun about something that goes on under the Capitol Dome just miles from here, and he can tell you the answer. It's pretty incredible. And I know that people around the region know this, including Shelley in Reno, Richard in Onyx. I'm always stunned by the diversity of the cities on this list. Judith in Lincoln and Lisa in Sacramento, David and it looks like Gail in Sonora, Jeannie in Folsom, Robin in Davis, Violet in Rancho Cordova, Chris in Auburn. Thank you, all of you, so much. If you didn't hear your city on that list or your name for that matter, give us a call right now at 1-800-800-5867 or go online at capradio.org.
The success of this fund drive is in your hands. Call now and set up your monthly contribution to Cap Radio and help pay for this vibrant source of news, information, and music. 1-800-800-5867.
And if you do it right now, today's the last full day, you will be entered to win a $500 Southwest gift card. So 800-800-5867 or do it online at capradio.org. And thank you.
You're listening to Insight Live on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Sound advice, if you're a regular listener, you know, is a weekly feature here on Insight. We explore music in a number of different genres. And Hey Listen host Nick Bruner's here with some of his favorite tracks for this week. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Beth.
We also have a flashback this week.
Yes, we're going to be getting to that towards the end of this set. I'm looking forward to getting into that tune as well, because it kind of highlights the history of in-studio performances here at the radio station.
I like the category you've chosen for this week, because if you say the phrase local band, your mind might go to what an expectation is.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. So often, I think local band kind of also sort of like has the same dubious distinction as like local news. You think like poorer quality for some reason, and that is not the case here at all. We're going to have four outstanding examples, starting with a band that has been making a lot of waves. They're called Drug Apartments. They have released a handful of EPs about 3 weeks ago. They just released their first full-length called Clean Living Under Difficult Circumstances on Mount St. Mountain Records, which is also a local record label. This track is amazing. It's called Black Coal, and look out.
It'd be easy to think that was produced somewhere else.
I'm sure.
I don't know why. That's a bad generalization, but
it's super clean. It's super polished, and I've had the pleasure of seeing Drug Apartments perform live a couple of times, and I saw them perform live before I actually heard their produced work, and so it's kind of hard to kind of get the sense of the vocal, well, not the vocals exactly, but the whole mix in a live setting in the places I've seen them hasn't always been like the best, but listening to them on their recorded work is great, especially when it comes to the vocals of Whitney Kebschel. Every time I see them live, it's like her vocals always seem to increase the gravity of the room. Everything feels heavier. I feel myself sinking. And that translates to their recorded work as well. She is just a monster vocalist, and it's awesome.
You said local record label. Do you have any sense how big that arena is in the Northern California region, Sacramento region?
Good question, because I don't know much about the business aspect of it. I know people who run various record labels, but it could be as small as operating out of your bedroom to having your own studio. So I guess the answer to that question, Beth, is no, I don't know how vast it is.
So many artists come in talking about the incubator that's here, the support for artists, the desire to increase the quality and the production level?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you see bands like Death Grips and Tiaras, they'll take off for different cities, and or they'll still have like ties back here. They'll come back, chick, chick, chick as well. They split their time between Sacramento and Brooklyn. And yeah, it's I'm getting a sense that there's more bands sticking around Sacramento and keeping it local.
All right, who's next?
Next is Michael and the Machines. This is a musician who operates out of the Nevada City, Grass Valley area. I first found out about Michael when he was in a band called the Soft Bombs. Back in January, he released an EP called Ghost of California, and this is the lead-off track.
Band with very high produced sound. Yeah.
It also kind of takes me back to sort of like an early 90s kind of Brit rock vibe I get off of this particular track. If you're a fan of, like, say, Rufus Wainwright or the Brian Jonestown Massacre, I think this EP would be right up your alley. Again, it's called Ghost of California by Michael and the Machines. You can pick that up on his Bandcamp profile right now.
That's Hey Listen host Nick Bruner. He's guiding us through this week's sound advice. All right, who's next?
We're going to mix some surf rock and some punk, two things that go together like chocolate and peanut butter, in my opinion. This is a group called Las Pulgas, and the track is Sistema.
I've heard the name of that band or that sound. Have you featured them before?
I haven't. Las Pulgas has been on my radar for a couple of months. They released an EP back in September. A friend of mine told me about them, and then I saw them featured in Submerge. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to go check them out. So thanks, Jonathan and Melissa over at Submerge. And they were also up for a Sammy this year, too. And they're this aggressive Spanglish punk rock act, and I absolutely love it. The vocalist for Las Pulgas told the Sac News in Review, she says, quote, "I don't necessarily try to make it easy to swallow," referring to the music. "It's okay if we get really political and deep into these conversations about police brutality and gentrification." And I think that is the hallmark of really good punk rock. I think good punk rock, to me, punk rock that says something, is a thumb in the eye of institutions, conventional thinking, and most importantly, apathy. So that's what I love about Las Pulgas. And I hope you do, too.
All right, now it's time for the flashback, except not totally, because it's a flashback with a contemporary This Weekend twist.
Yeah, so a flashback and a flash forward right here in the present. Sea of Bees, Jules Baysinger, long-running recording artist and vocalist, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist, and just awesome person all around. Back in 2010, she recorded an in-studio performance here at Cap Radio, and as I found out a few years later, it was the first time that she debuted this music at all outside of a recording studio. Mm. So her friends from the Hangar Studio in Sacramento, the storied studio that closed a few years ago, John Bacik Lupia, they brought microphones and had a real, they brought some food from Cordy Brothers and some wine that pitched up in our community room. It was a real kind of family band, kind of Parchment Farm. The family that drove around in the bus. Help me out, Beth, it's Fun Drive.
Partridge Family.
Partridge Family.
David Cassidy.
Oh, God. There we go.
Laurie on the keyboard.
Thank you so much for that assist. Anyway.
Who can forget Danny?
it was that wonderful kind of like family style vibe. And we recorded it. And this track is called Side Pain. Recording quality, let's put it this way. We both have come quite a long ways, Cap Radio and Sea of Bees, in that 9 years. So her vocals get a little lost in this, but it captures a real great energy. And I'll play it for you here. So like I said, that was the recording quality, and I was the engineer on that one, so that one's on me. But her vocals still just cut through. They're so energetic, yeah. They're poppy and poetic. And that was from her first LP called Songs for the Ravens, which that year, wow. NPR made a favorite of theirs, which helped cement that record label, Crossbill, which was operating then out of Davis, California, to be a bigger player. And it's been so much fun to watch Jules grow. And she'll be playing here in our community room. On Saturday.
That's the thing to get to. A little bit more about that.
Yeah. So we are having our second Saturday reception, and we're debuting the finalists from our print radio competition that happened last month. And what that was is just basically people were given some keywords, and they were designing posters that are up for a competition to be the official designs for our Tiny Desk Sacramento Showcase coming up June 1st. So we're tying together local music, we're tying together local visual artists, and we're tying together you, if you dig music. Come on out to Second Saturday. It's free to RSVP at our website. Hope to see you out there. I'll be there. Hope to say hi. And so will Jules of Sea of Bees.
You know, let's share just a little bit of the album version
yes.
of Side Pain.
Yes,
so
please.
We hear the recorded version. I'll say thank you to you, Nick Bruner.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you on behalf of Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak, and here's a little more of Sea of Bees, the album version of Side Pain.
And you're listening to Insight here on Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White. It's 9:58. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I'm joined by Rick Etchison. It is the final day, Rick, of our fund drive to keep this station rolling along for another 40 years. We're celebrating 40 years right now.
That's right. 40 years. Last week was our 40th birthday.
Yeah.
I have one word for you.
What's that?
Now.
Now.
Now is the time.
Right now.
We're ending this drive tomorrow morning, but we still need your help. Get in the door before it closes. Help us bring you your favorite programs with a contribution right now. The fund drive ends soon. Call now, 1-800-800-5867 or capradio.org.
And Rick, another reason why now is the key word is if you call now, you will be entered for a $500 Southwest gift card. So let your imagination just run. Like, well, Southwest will soon be, you were mentioning during the
Hawaii.
Break. They're going to be going to Hawaii out of the Sacramento airport anyway. And so, yeah, $500 Southwest gift card. Your name will be thrown into that drawing if you call now. It's 1-800-800-5867. 800-800-5867 or online at capradio.org.
Now is the time.
Now
is the word. Now is the time. 1-800-800-5867 or capradio.org.
And you do it because you love Insight, which you just heard there with Nick Bruner, who introduces you to so many different types of new music. Really incredible stuff. That's why you give now at 800-800-5867 or online at capradio.org. And thank you so much for your donation.